Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:05 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is May 8th. I thought I'd kick off with Bitcoin. It's down $1,500, and that's on the back of some outages at Binance. But it's a bit deeper than that because there was an innovation that was released, or it was a fork released last year, the Lightning Network, which was supposed to run on top of Bitcoin's blockchain, and the entire hype around it was that it was going to make everything faster. It was going to greatly enhance the ability of Bitcoin to effect transactions in a quick manner. But that's just not working. So there've been several meme coins that have been created on the back now of the Bitcoin network, and the volatility in those is slowing down the entire thing. And this is really having an issue. But the bigger point, of course, is that the whole point of it was that it was supposed to make it faster. It was going to innovate to such an extent that it was going to allow Bitcoin to become a medium of exchange. And that's not happening. So the price is coming back down, and certainly still encountering resistance in the region of the 30,000 level. Now, I think it's worth highlighting that the halving in 2020 was around there. So prices declined into it. About a year before it, there was a good size rally, and the price went from about 3,500 up to about 13,000. So that was a really substantial move. We're about a year out from the halving, and the price went from about 15 to 30,000. So it's a doubling. Now, of course, when prices are this high, it's a lot harder to go up by 4 times, 5 times, 6 times, 10 times. So that's of course also why there's a lot more activity in some of the meme coins, because their prices are smaller. A comparatively small amount of money can have a multiplication effect. But then let's just think about the cycle. We had a good sized rally from about January through until about June. And this rally started in November, and it looks like it peaked in April. So pretty similar in terms of magnitude. And then prices came down gradually. Didn't quite go all the way back down to the low, but by the time we kind of played it forward for a year, it was right around the pandemic low. And then prices started to recover subsequently, and prices didn't really break out until after the halving. So, having had a good sized rally and having hit a point of resistance, there is the potential that this initial portion of the rally is running out of steam, and that over the course of the next several months, we will have a more attractive buying opportunity. And then let's also then think about Ethereum, because prices got up to test the $2,000 level and are now easing back as well. Now, both are still above their respective trend means. So prices could yet rebound, and this could still be a recovery situation, and the short-term rally could proceed further. But there are a couple of things that I think are worth also considering, that gold is outperforming Bitcoin right now. So gold prices were up today, and not up a lot, but certainly up, whereas Bitcoin was down a lot. And the price is consolidating mostly around this 2,000 level, which is the upper side of the range. So gold is knocking on the door of all-time highs, and Bitcoin's a long way from that. And we are not in the same kind of macroeconomic environment today as we were for most of the last 15 years. We went in the aftermath of the global financial crisis from exceptionally low interest rates with a threat of deflation, where there was abundant money creation and no inflation problem, which really favored long duration assets, which were growth and long dated bonds and asset price appreciation like property. And the stock market really did exceptionally well. And Bitcoin was a liquidity barometer and did even better than everything else. Gold, by comparison, did reasonably well, but not on the same magnitude as some of those other asset classes. And has spent a good deal of time ranging despite the negative real interest rate environment. And the good reason for that was because the dollar was so firm. And the dollar has been on a lengthy period of outperformance since about 2013. Now, that might well be reversing today, and that helps to explain why gold is stronger. But I think the bigger question here is what happens if we are in more of a stagflationary environment so that we do not go back into a very low interest rate, abundant liquidity environment, and instead that interest rates may fall during a recession but quickly rebound, do not go back down to the lows, put in a higher reaction low, that there will be much greater attention paid to the outlook for inflation. And that subsequently, it will be limited supply assets would do better because interest rates will stay higher for longer. Well, that would favor gold over Bitcoin. So I think there's certainly an argument to support this divergence between the two asset classes. Now let's also just pay attention to what's happening in the wider commodity complex. So when we think about iron ore prices, nothing really happens in iron ore without China. And iron ore is continuing to pull back from the peak in 2021, hovering here around the $100 a ton level. And then copper prices are also not really going to do much without China. China's about half the market. And the price was a little steadier in here today and still hovering here at the lower side of the range that's been forming for the last 6 months and the upper side of the underlying range. So it's a natural area where we might anticipate some support coming through. China today, we had a big move higher in the financials. So they're looking to support the financial sector. And the banks have popped higher over the last three sessions, pushing back above the 1,000-day moving average, but that doesn't really mean much when there's no trend. And there hasn't really been a trend for 7 years in Chinese banks, but they have at least broken the sequence of lower rally highs that's been in place since the middle of 2021. Now, when we look at some of the individual banks, ICBC, I think, is a good example. That it has rebounded in an impressive manner over the last three sessions. It's in the process now of challenging the sequence of lower rally highs that's been in place since early 2018. And if the state-owned enterprises get more attention from the central government and are given greater leeway to lend money and are provided that money by the central government, then that's likely to be beneficial. Now, it's going to obviously raise important questions about the place of private enterprise in the Chinese system. As if those questions weren't there already, they're likely to be re-emphasized. But if the banks are going to be provided with additional cash, then that is certainly a positive. And China's banking sector doing better is a potential source of liquidity. And I think that there's going to have to be liquidity coming from somewhere. The Federal Reserve doesn't look likely to be in a hurry to cut interest rates, and they're going to wait until they have a good reason to. And with unemployment at close to record lows, then they're not going to be in. Or they're not going to be under any pressure to cut interest rates aggressively soon. What I find especially interesting right now is that there are a large number of these soft commodities are strengthening. So Robusta Coffee has now pushed up to make a new recovery high. And it is breaking out above the $2,400 level, and that is completing a 12-year range. And Vietnam recorded its highest temperature ever for this time of the year, which is like 44 degrees Celsius. So the Vietnam index is steadying. But there's the potential here that there could be heat damage to the coffee crop. Then in India, they're not exporting as much sugar, so that's helping to support the sugar price. And there's some acceleration underway right now, and this has been a really impressive breakout. But I thought what was especially interesting last week was that the price did pull back and then rebounded. Now it was in negative territory in here today, and that low around the 25 level absolutely needs to hold if this trend is going to remain consistent. There's been some talk that loadings of cocoa in Ghana have been falling, and that's helping to support the cocoa price. So it's coming up to the upper side of its longer term range. And then rough rice has had a big contract change, so there's a big gap lower. And the individual commodity price has been falling, but it is now in the region of that 1,000-day moving average. Now you can definitely see that there was another big contract change in the middle of 2020, but the potential for much hotter weather in Asia is something that could play havoc with some of these commodity prices. And then wheat has been coming down following the big acceleration following the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, but it is beginning to steady. So that's the upper side of the longer term base formation around the 600 cent level. It's a natural area where we might anticipate some support starting to come back in. And then natural gas prices have also pulled back in an exceptionally aggressive manner. Now the continuous commodity or the continuation chart is hovering here around the $2 level, and prices are steadier. We do need to look at the individual contract for some additional intelligence on what exactly is happening, because it's still trending downwards, but certainly bouncing over the last 2 days. I'm very much of the view that natural gas prices are unlikely to stay down for long because they're competitive with the coal price at these levels. And I'm anticipating that we're going to see quite a bit of volatility with the oil price. There's a tanker that's on fire off the coast of Singapore. In fact, I think it's in Malaysian waters. The most important thing about it is that it's uninsured. And this was a pretty obvious consequence of the bifurcation in the transportation of crude following the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. Russian oil is still moving around the world, but it's moving around in older ships, and particularly those where the cost of insurance is prohibitive. And then because they are transporting Russian oil, then nobody is going to insure them anyway, which means that there is a lot of death traps floating around the world right now transporting Russian oil. Now this one in particular was empty. But the reality is that it's inevitable there's going to be an accident. And at some stage there's going to be a massive oil spill. And then there won't be the insurance coverage. There's going to be a problem with paying for the cleanup. And it is going to be manifested in a lot of volatility in oil prices. Now, the Brent crude price is bouncing again from the $70 level, and it's unwinding the short-term oversold condition. Now, we certainly have the threat of lower economic growth globally, which I think is also why China is stimulating via the banking sector. But the bigger picture here is that oil prices have come down from $120 a year ago, and there's efforts underway by OPEC to try and support prices, but that's totally dependent on consumers being in a position to continue to buy. And then, of course, we have what's going on in South Africa, and Eskom has been chronically mismanaged and has been the victim of graft all the way through the supply chain. And There's the potential that during the South African winter, which is starting now, that there are going to be even more severe power cuts. And platinum prices surged in 2008 because there were very prolonged power cuts in South Africa. Now, the price subsequently collapsed during the financial crisis. But that certainly didn't stop the price from accelerating, going from 1400 to 2300 in the space of really only about 5 or 6 months. And then, of course, the price collapsed. And I suspect that as we look now at this base formation, where we had the failed downside break in 2020, the failed upside break in 2021, and now we're still in this lengthy range that's been forming since 2015. And platinum anticipated the diesel cheating scandal breaking in 2016 by declining all the way through 2014 and 15. And now the price is beginning to stabilize. So there's obviously the potential that the prices will be impacted by power cuts in South Africa. Now, there are plenty of big corporations in South Africa that are investing in their own supply. And there was a lot of talk about that in 2008 as well. But of course, it's expensive. And then the big problem is the trend of governance has deteriorated significantly in the last 15 years. I think it's particularly relevant to pay attention to the rand. And it's hovering here around the 18 level, which is the region of the dollar's highs and the rand's lows back in 2018. And it was a little steadier in here today. But if South Africa can't get its fiscal situation under control, get inflation under control, and get the economy under control, then there's the potential the rand will deteriorate further. And in order to really demonstrate we're back in a demand-dominated environment, you will have to strengthen through the 200-day moving average. So, in the commodity sector, there's certainly a lot more activity, and with a substantial number of those commodities breaking on the upside. And I think this is something that we just need to pay attention to because the dollar has only just begun to decline. And it was a little steadier in here today, and we're at the lower side of the range overall, and the upper side of that range that formed between 2015 and 2021. So, if it breaks below the 100 level, then that's going to act as a much stronger tailwind to the broad commodity complex overall. And generally speaking, when commodities do well, then that's incompatible with a lot of interest in the high-tech sector. Now, breadth in the Nasdaq has deteriorated considerably, and performance has been driven by the largest companies and an increasingly small number of them. But the Nasdaq 100 at least was in positive territory in here today, and it is continuing to sustain the move above the 200-day moving average, but it hasn't really gone anywhere for 6 weeks. And we're still in an environment where bond yields are holding here around the 3.5% level. And everyone is questioning about how long the Federal Reserve will keep these rates higher for, when will they cut, how much will they cut, and how long will they stay down for. If we really are in a stagflationary environment, the missing ingredient for stagflation is high unemployment at the same time as high inflation. I think it is more likely that we're going to get a deflationary shock, and that negative money supply coupled with an inverted yield curve are pretty good recipes for deflation. But if inflationary pressures get that kind of shock, it'll be in response to a sharp contraction in economic activity. And that, of course, is also why the dollar is rolling over. So there's certainly a lot of movement outside of stock markets. and the stock markets themselves were quite were fairly quiet in here today. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.